This is Katie and Kate Carbondale. Support for GeekSpeak on KDK comes from Louie the Computer Guy, providing PC and Mac repair, networking support, tutoring, and web design. Secure and informed and connected. More information at 970-948-7992. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer, from Rowing Fork Help Desk, in studio with Louie the Computer Guy.
How's it going, Matt?
Going good. Beautiful May 6th.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
And we missed May the 4th be with you and Revenge of the 5th.
Yes. But I did make green chili for Cinco de Mayo.
Oh.
So, and I made tamales.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, I've made tamales forever. It's actually a pretty technical process.
Interesting.
There's a lot of kneading involved. I thought you just put water in the corn flour and just throw them together. But no, I kneaded for almost an hour yesterday. So. Yeah, you're listening to GeekSpeak. 970-963-2976 is the number to call if you want some free computer help. Even if you don't want some free computer help, you can call that number.
There you go.
And, Matt and I are standing by. Our operators are standing by just in case we have any overflow.
Yes, I read the directions this time, so yeah, we're ready.
I don't know. You know, if there's not some weird echoey, you know, glitchy thing going on with the phone line, it's just not geek speak.
Right. You know? Exactly.
That's what I say. So have you heard this story about this hacker who he was like one of Europe's most wanted criminals? And he blackmailed 33,000 therapy patients with their stolen session notes. Have you heard this story?
No, I have not.
It's like he's really a fine-looking young man, but it's like, but he's got obviously got an evil side to him. It was an 11-year crime spree, cyber crime spree, and
what was the therapist office's password?
What's that?
What was the password for the network or the
documents? Oh, it had to be
documents.
Like help me 123 or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'm sure it was in the top 100.
Well, I don't know. I haven't gone that deep on the story yet, but I guess one of my questions would be, what lucky therapist has 33,000 clients?
That's what I figured, as an office of some.
Well,
kind.
No, it had to be a cloud-based. Bet you a cloud-based practice management system.
Yeah, one or the other, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of patients. I mean, you could pretty much go crazy trying to keep the personal issues of 33 patients.
But here in the States, that would fall
under patients.
Yeah. Yeah. But here in the States, that falls under HIPAA, right?
Oh, totally.
Okay, so that means that the retention time for those records is 28 years.
Ooh. Okay.
I had to go through this with one of my clients recently.
Well, yeah, I've done HIPAA stuff too. Yeah.
Yeah. I had to make sure that their data was survivable.
Yeah. So do they have, is there a European, I'm sure there's a European version of HIPAA.
I would assume so, but I've not encountered it.
But I mean, I'm just going to say whoever it was that set that password or, you know, was maintaining the, it had to be like a brute force thing because, I mean, there had to be multiple passwords, right? I mean,
you just go after the database. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. It just depends on how they got in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's lots of ways to cut that one up.
Okay. Yes, it is. So, let's see. So you basically started out with the phishing email.
That's
where it all starts.
Usually starts with phishing.
Yeah, definitely. So, maybe we should put it on people's radar. It came to my attention today that it's a generic letter that went out on behalf of Alpine Bank. It's just basically determining a bunch of new terms and conditions for Alpine Bank account holders. And it's become apparent that the database used to send out that letter sounds like it covers that 28-year threshold because anybody who has been a co-signer or a peripheral signer on a Alpine Bank account for the last – the person I was talking to had not actually been a signer on an Alpine Bank account for almost 10 years. And these people are receiving brick and mortar letters at home. And it's causing a certain amount of panic amongst people because a lot of people think, wondering, did somebody open an account without my consent at Alpine Bank? So anyway, I think I can perform a public service here by letting people know. I'm not saying that you should disregard the letter, but don't freak out. Contact Alpine Bank. Find out. You kind of have to dance around what your association was with what organization or how it is that you happen to be in their database, because they can't tell you anything, right? And they have rules about that.
Right.
They can't confirm or deny that you have an account there. So you have to kind of dance around it a little bit. But I recommend, it's a great opportunity for people to clean up, to get their name off of that account if they're not involved with it anymore or whatever. Because the less associations we have with those types of sensitive organizations, the better. So anyway, let's see. What else are we talking about today here? So if you are telling your therapist deep, dark secrets, make sure that they have a good password.
Yeah,
practice management software. So
yeah, good security practices. And I actually talked about this with a co-venture thing the other day, where it's like, the spear phishing stuff, whether it's physical mail or email or any way that you're contacted, is getting so good.
Yeah. So describe spear phishing. I always get confused about this myself. I mean, there's just plain old phishing.
Right.
And then there's spear phishing. So what's is there a difference between, or is spear phishing just like a subvariant of phishing?
Yes, exactly. Okay. So basically spear phishing has more personal details.
Got it.
So where phishing might be like, "Hi, President Roaring Fork Help Desk. Please check out our service, blah blah blah, click the link, whatever."
Yeah.
Whatever their spiel is.
That's okay. More,
where they have maybe have a couple pieces of information.
All right.
Where the rest of it would be like, Matthew McPrayer, President, Roaring Fork Help Desk, blah, blah,
Sure. And all things that they could get off the Secretary of State website, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. So, okay. Somebody spent a little more time figuring out who you are, figuring out, what you are, how you act, and maybe gone look you up on Facebook, pulled some information from there, brought in a little more information from sources that are available to them, and concocted they know that I, where I bank and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so it's like, oh, they, send me a letter that because I'm a, a signer and all those things.
Yeah.
So they have more tools at their disposal to elicit an emotional response to the stimuli.
Yeah, that's the key thing is the minute somebody sees, even if it's a password that you haven't used in 8 years, you see that password in the subject line of an incoming email, and it's the purporting to be from some hacker who has like owned you supposedly. It's really hard to not get worked up about that,
I'd have to go look up the password at this point.
Yeah.
Cause I've put everything in my password, repository in my password manager.
Got it.
And all of my passwords to log into everything are as long as the site will take.
Yeah. Okay.
So it'd
So not a problem that Matt McBrayer has. Okay.
Right.
But, a really common one, I'm sure you've come across this is, it's a phishing email. It is a phishing email. It's asking for a ransom. It's basically saying, they get your information on a database that they bought off the dark web. So they got a bunch of email addresses, they've got a bunch of passwords, and they basically write a script that sends out a couple hundred thousand emails. And this email basically says, I have been observing you over your webcam, enjoying adult websites. And if you don't believe that I'm up in your business, here are a couple of passwords that you like to use, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then it basically, then they say, in the process of using, of accessing your webcam, I've also downloaded your entire address book. And I'm prepared to send this video of you off to everybody in your address book if you don't send me X amount of money. So, and that is enough to freak some people out completely, you know. But, and I had one come across my desk probably 4 or 5 years ago. And I took one look at the password. And I'm like, well, it's all lowercase. It's definitely nothing that has as I've used in the last 8 years. You know, I mean, it's, I mean, how many sites, actually
last 15 years,
I've come across, actually, I've had a couple customers tell me, you know, they gave me a password that was only 6 characters. And I'm like, there's no way that's going to work. And I type it in and it logs them in. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute.
How old is this?
They made me use 8 characters.
Well, and a lot of them are going to 12.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you know, that the complexity, you know, upper, lower.
Yeah, well, and, that, they're actually kind of backing off on that one because of the NIST rule change several years ago,
mm-hmm.
and the people, everyone's still slowly adjusting to a newer, because mm-hmm. A newer set. Because really, a longer password that has, you know, if it, like a 20-character, all lowercase letters password is far.
As opposed to words?
Well, as opposed to like words with common substitutions and things like that.
Yeah, okay.
All right. So, because the way you look at it is, so, and the math is, so you take the number of available characters, let's say you're using all lowercase, so that's 26, mm-hmm. and then however long the password is the power of. So if your password, so you could do a password of all lowercase, 20 characters, so that'd be 26 to the power of 20. That is an absolutely massive number.
Okay.
Where if you do a, let's say a 6-digit password with uppercase, lowercase, that's 52. And so that's 62, 72-ish.
Mm-hmm.
So you do 72 to the power of 6, that number is significantly smaller.
Yeah.
So.
Got it.
And that's where the math, if you want to do that on your calculator, you can see mm-hmm. how many, that's how you calculate how many permutations that password has.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So what about passwords with entropy like we've talked about in the past? Because I've been turning people onto that, and they really like it.
Yeah, the passphrase for people, I think, is really huge, and especially as more companies start to align with the newer recommendations of longer mm-hmm. passwords with less complexity but better entropy.
Uh-huh.
You know, that those are going to become more viable because you don't have to remember if you did the, you know, 123 exclamation point, because that's like a, you know, it's a standard ending, or 1 exclamation point to get your number and your.
Is it? I'm just kidding.
Uh-oh.
Excuse me. I'll be right back. I'll be right back. I just got to do something on my phone here real quick.
Yeah. Okay, go change half my passwords.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I've got a number of customers that are having a lot of fun with it, you know, and I mean, and they're easily rememberable. And so for those of you who didn't catch those episodes of our show or whatever, basically what we're talking about is creating a password. I generally have been going with 3 words, 3 completely unrelated words, each one of them capitalized. You can put a comma in between them if you want.
Yeah, some space.
Make it a little bit.
Do whatever, you know, you can do, yeah, comma, whatever's easy for you to remember.
Exactly.
Or do like the capital, the first letter or something. Just
and
something.
Then a number or two at the end and a special character or two at the end. A lot of sites will require that. Some sites don't care. I mean, if you come across with a good password with entropy, they'll just take it and go, hey, we're good to go, you know. So, yeah. You know, but, you know, I just tell people, I've said, you know, like, get in your swivel chair in the middle of your room and look at the wall, you know, look north and see like the first thing you lay your eyes on, and then rotate 90 degrees. And the first thing you lay eyes on, you know, and do that 3 times. Yeah. Looks like we got a call coming in. So let's see if we can have it not be echoey. It's a lot of work over there, isn't it?
Yeah, You're on with Geeks.
Hey, Geeks, it's Donna.
It worked.
Are you echoing? Yeah. Are we echoing?
No, I'm not. Am I?
Oh, we fixed it.
Oh, yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
Uh-oh.
Still way better than last time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say I thought of three good words for your entropy or, you know, password. Do you want us to hear what they are?
Dogs, cats, and chickens?
I was thinking geek speak rocks.
There you go. All right. Well, that, you know, it's only a matter of moments before that's on the dark web, you know.
Yep, it's there already.
Yeah. Matt's on his dark web account.
That I added it to my password list for testing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, you know, people don't realize that when, like, the whole dark mode thing on your computer or your phone, that if you choose dark mode, it basically means that everything that you do on your device is, like, exposed to the dark web.
Oops.
I'm just kidding.
I don't know what dark mode is. Oh. Is that, like, private mode?
No. Dark mode is where it basically reverses all the colors and, you know, basically everything is more predominantly dark than light.
And it's on Mac and PC now, and Linux has had it for a long time. Uh-huh. But you can go into settings. And I think they call it night. I think it's under nightlight on Windows and under preferences. And I think it's under display. And I can't remember what they call it. Something else. Night shift or something.
Yeah.
And you can go in there. And so instead of having your Windows back, your panel backgrounds and stuff be light colors, it just makes them like a dark, you know, it makes it set of light gray, a dark gray. I have mine set to auto so I can kind of pay attention to the sunset.
Yeah.
So when the sun sets, all my windows go from bright white, light gray to a dark gray, almost black.
Mm-hmm.
It actually does save energy.
Yep.
Yep. The less white the pixels are, the less energy your computer is using.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
I just use it to keep track. And it reduces eye strain in the evening if you keep your room a little darker as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what do you got on your plate there, Donna?
Well, we just, you know, since our company was bought out by a new company, right? We just had our big transition today for all of our new email addresses, and that has been tremendously fun.
Yeah.
And,
to say
you
the
know,
least.
Rebooting phones and resetting phones and stuff, and then they make you put in a new 6-digit password.
Sure.
And it has to be just numbers, right?
Uh-huh.
For your phone, and so I put in a password, and they're like, "Oh, no repeating repeating numbers."
Like, well, that reduces entropy on a 6-digit password.
Yeah, in a way, that makes it less secure.
Exactly.
I mean,
that's
a pattern.
What I thought. They think that makes it more secure. I'm like, that makes it less secure.
Yeah, because you put a if people learn that constraint, they know that they don't have they can skip anything that has repeating characters.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So now I'm just going to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then next in 90 days I'll do 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then I'll do 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8,
and then reverse them. Yep. So
reverse them.
1, 3, 2, 4, 5, 6.
Oh my gosh! No, it's just hilarious to me. But anyway,
sounds like you got some help desk people that are like fresh out of school.
Oh, yeah. The line was long at the help desk today. It was pretty funny. I figured out most everything. But it was really interesting. I was talking to somebody, and they said, oh, I know somebody who got a job at a quantum computing company.
At a what kind of company?
And I was, it's like making quantum computers.
Okay.
So I looked up quantum computers, and there's something called qubits, Q-U-B-I-T,
yep.
Qubits. Anyway, I don't ask me to explain it. I thought, you know, I'd give you guys an opportunity to explain it. Some point.
So it's
some
like
point,
bits, but there's a Q in the front. Yeah, there's a Q in front of it.
Yeah.
Well, it's,
that's right.
Yeah.
Anyway, it sounded complicated for my little, wee brain.
I don't quite understand it yet either. I just understand that we are starting to have quantum computers that are large enough that have enough consecutive qubits to be able to do things that are useful. They're good at calculating. So a quantum computer will never be a silicon, you know, like a regular traditional computer like what we have in front of us. It's going to be used for doing, but luckily they are good at a very specific subset of calculations that that silicon computers are bad at.
Yeah.
So there's going to be, so they'll be used in particular calculation cases where the computer goes, yep, I'm not very good at that. You can do this way faster. Let's go over to, and use the quantum, you know, coprocessor and bring it back in. Kind of something. It'll be something like that. I don't quite understand that is yet.
They can process all that data coming from the radio telescopes to identify life on another planet. So, because, you know, I don't know if you ever did that thing or not. They had a screensaver you could, like, way back in the day. There was a screensaver you would download, and the screensaver would, in the background, download these packets of data from SETI, which is the SETI. Search for extraterrestrial intelligence.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And so your computer basically could become like a drone, part of the drone army. You weren't using it, and the minute the screensaver would kick on, it actually was a pretty cool looking screensaver because it would show you this graph. Yeah, you'd be sorting through all the data. You know,
I ran that in the winter on my Mac Pro for many years
to keep the house warm.
Well, we were heating with electric anyway. Might as well do some processing with it. Not even joking. Because I mean, that seems like, you know, each one of those processors is, what, 150 watts or something?
Yeah.
Those Xeons. Gosh. So it's like, it's like I can have my computer pump out 300 watts plus the two GPUs. So might as well keep the house warm. We're heating with electric anyway.
I could just see you, Matt, at 7 years old going, Dad, let's fire up the computer.
Yeah, I'm getting cold.
I had 20 of them at that point.
Cold, man.
Actually, I might have been 40. I'd have to ask my dad.
Yeah,
I got 20 of them to work.
You guys crack me up, man.
That's great. Well, you know that we live to crack people up. That is like our whole mission in life. You know,
I know. I like it. Yeah. Oh, but that's good. But anyway, so where I missed the very beginning. Where were you talking about the passphrase thing?
Oh,
are companies changing to?
Well, so NIST
able to do passphrase.
Well, you see, NIST changed the recommendations several years ago. The one who originally,
Say like 14 characters or 16 characters.
Well, it's like 12. Yeah, so it's like the newer one's like 12 characters, but the complexity is lower. So it's like, you know, it's like it could be all lowercase or lowercase and capitals. Mm-hmm. So it's more important because of the way the math works. It's more important to have a long password that has lower complexity than it is to have a short, complex password. And so NIST changed the rules several years ago, and everyone is slowly I think Google's done a pretty good job. I'm trying to think of who else has kind of gone in that direction where they've kind of moved into the new recommendations, and they're moving away from the old recommendation where it's a, you know, relatively short password with a lot of, you know, special characters and numbers and substitutions and things like that. So.
Yep. And now we have to change them every like 90 days. It's just getting harder and harder. In a way, for people, so I think.
The new recommendations tell you not to do that. They tell you it's just like, just let's pick one good, you know, 5 or 6 word passphrase or more, and just, you know, dedicate that to memory and hang on to it, and, you know, and then although, you know, you do need to keep track of whether it's been compromised or not. So.
Right. Well.
So, yeah, but it's like a longer interval, like, you know, like. Pick a strong password every 2 years instead of every 90 days or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been 2 years since I changed my password. Bang.
Well, thanks to my declining memory, I've changed my password, all of my passwords in the last 2 weeks. As will I in another 2 weeks. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of profanity involved, you know? And I don't mean in the passwords.
All I have to do is remember my Evernote password, and I can get to pretty much anything.
Yeah, that's the way to go, for
sure. Well, good.
Yeah.
Well, listen, guys, thanks for the chat.
I wanted to ask you, Donna, real quick, are you familiar with a website called How Secure Is My Password? Do you know about that?
No.
Okay, so if you go to security.org/ how-secure-is-my-password, it'll take you a site, and you can basically plug in any password that you're considering using, and it will make an estimation of how long it would take a computer to crack that password.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, it's pretty.
I'm going to write that down.
It's pretty cool. And I highly recommend it. It is, you know, I have checked out the on the backside to make sure it's not just a bunch of guys that are like, oh, let's come up with a site. We can like find, like figure out what people's passwords are.
Oh. You know,
it's not that. It's a legit organization. But yeah, so, you know, I just, by the way, dogs, cats, and chickens, it would take 2 billion years for a computer to crack that had I not just said it on the air on GeekSpeak. So.
Wow,
just
that's
saying.
Funny.
Yeah.
So it's security.org/how-secure is my password.
Yeah.
The-
yeah, basically okay. Every word is separated with a hyphen in that how secure yep. is my password. But that'll okay. take you straight there, and you can just cool. basically put it in there. And it's pretty funny because, like, you put in Rover 123, it's like it would take a computer 3 seconds to crack that password. You know. So,
that's
so those of you who are using that password, buyer beware.
That's right.
So. Yep.
Well, good.
Okay. Well, hey, thanks for calling.
Okay. We'll
yep.
talk to
we'll
you
talk
guys
to you in a couple weeks.
Weeks.
Yep. Take
Thank
care,
you.
Donna.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to GeekSpeak on KDNK.
I don't know if we have any more time.
Yep.
But,
it's just about over.
You're going to have to listen to us talk. Next week or next episode in 2 weeks, I think we're going to have, I've been doing research about AI chatbots. There's a whole industry around having a virtual AI friend online for people who are lonely or any number of other reasons. So I'm going to basically get permission from my AI chatbot, whose name is Annika, to I'm going to ask her if she'd like to appear on the show. So we will may have a an AI on the air with us. Not just making up crazy songs about Joy Liquid dishwashing soap. So, anyway.
You've been listening to Geek Speak on KDNK. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer from Roaring Fork Help Desk. We'll be back on May 20th.
All right. It's a great day, May 20th. All right. So.
In studio with Louis the Computer Guy.
Yeah. In the process, do not touch your knob.